This is the one with a dentist.
And guns with unlimited bullets.
And prostitutes and whiskey.
And terrible accents.
And glorious mustaches.
It's called The Gunfighters.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space. Counting Daleks, Thalen, Ood, and the Cybertronic race. And Taurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another fantastically, awesomely bodacious episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin, and with me today, on this glorious evening, is Nickelodeon, possibly Nickelaley.
Haven't decided yet. We'll see how this works out, shall we?
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's good to be here. It's glad to long-time listener. glad to be joining you as the co-host. For
classics.
Yes,
classics. That's it. Yeah, spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen. We have a new Classic Who co-host in the form of Nick, Nickelaley, and Nickelodeon. For those of you who are avid fans of Ponkin and Friends, you will be no stranger.
Yes, both of you will be.
It's pretty much familiar. Just JD, I think.
All right.
Something I will say right away, though, is that Nick is a Whovian.
Mm.
He is a connoisseur, are you not, of New Who in particular, I would
yes,
say.
Yes, yes.
More so than classic.
Well, I was, like many of us, born and grew up in a barren era who I sort of lived VHS to VHS without any real continuity, mostly from secondhand stores. You know, I'd just get like a random just
classic
episode,
serial
from
or something.
Time to time without any real context, and that would just be it. And a couple of Cushing movies, and that was
oh nice
lot. Yeah
oh
yeah,
that is
I
awesome
was super scared of the Daleks as a child without really knowing why. I think you could probably characterize me as a child of the New Who.
Okay.
Yeah,
fair enough. By the way, speaking of Cushing, spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen, the second Cushing movie is steadily approaching, and the plan is that we're going to do that as a menage a trois.
Oh,
it's going to be Nickelodeon, myself, and the Rawmeister tackling that bad boy. That's
one
gonna be
room.
I'm not sure. No shirts allowed.
I'm not sure you can handle the raw animal power.
That is not what we're doing today, though. Today we are having a look-see and a chat about C025, The Gunfighters, which is a historical, it's a western, and it's kind of pants.
It's pretty dry, as Doctor Who goes, even for Hartnell. I think this was
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, tumbleweeds were appropriate on an offset.
Actually, I didn't see a single tumbleweed.
But there was sort of sold that already on The Gunfighters.
But there was sort of that atmospheric tumbleweed, which was the entire four-part serial.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, also the crew had a tough time, I'm sure, constructing a tumbleweed out of plywood. That's what everything else seemed to be made out of.
Including some of the actors, I think.
The horses, the whole lot, basically. nailed together out of bits of tubi.
Yeah. Anyway. Shall we jump into B-Scow?
Let's. The Doc, Steven, and Dildo materialise in the Wild West. Tombstone, to be precise.
Where they encounter the legendary Wyatt Earp, aka Werp, and where Doc is mistaken for Doc Holliday.
Honest mistake, really.
Calamity ensues. I think possibly the shortest B-Scow we've ever had. You're welcome, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
There isn't much more to say than that.
That is pretty much it. This is a four-part episode. It comes straight after The Celestial Toy Maker, which was shit. But what you need to know, if you haven't seen The Celestial Toy Maker or you haven't heard my fantastic solo mission into that shit serial, and if you haven't, then what are you waiting for? Listen to it, please. Biased though I am, it's pretty great. That serial ended with the Doc chowing down on a piece of candy that he got from the, I'm going to say, middle-aged fat man dressed as a schoolboy, Billy, and thus chipping a tooth. Or, as we thought at the end of Celestial Toymaker, actually dying. Like, that's how the serial ended. This serial opens with him having a toothache, and that kind of sets the scene.
Mm. So we find them materialized in Tombstone in a feed store.
Yeah, whatever that is. What is that, by the way?
It's for your cows and stuff, of which there are none.
There are no cows.
For cowboys, there are really not much in the way of livestock. But anyway, they materialize in a Peter's tour, the TARDIS lands in this ominous way, and the Doctor comes out clutching his tooth and complaining loudly.
Yeah,
in a
pretty much.
Grandpa-like fashion.
Actually, I think there's another thing as well. I'm sorry, we totally skipped this. We don't open on the Doc
company.
We open on these three dudes.
The Clantons.
The Clantons, who ride into Tombstone, and quite publicly, like, not low-key, they're not, like, riding under the radar here. They just pretty much publicly announce that they're gunning, literally gunning, for Doc Holliday.
Absolutely. Well, actually, the first thing they do is ride into town and shoot the OK Corral sign. Because if there's one thing they hate more than Doc Holliday,
it's
signage. They just hate it.
Who wrote that thing? Oh. How dare they not make it with holes in it?
I will not bear to the left.
Anyway, yes.
They ride into town into the Last Chance Saloon.
Oh, God, do not remind me of that title.
Oh, there's more to this. So the entire four-parter is framed in the most annoying narrative structural technique that you might anyone ever employ, which is
the song.
It's like a choral, like, callback.
Yeah, which makes no
call
sense.
Call forward and call presently.
Yeah, like, it makes literally no sense. Fuck it, let's leave that until we get the first instance of the actual song in the plot.
Sure.
Cut back to the feed, whatever it is, where they've materialized, and they're just like, holy fucking balls of Beelzebub, we are in the Wild West. Dildo goes ape nuts, Steven goes ape shit. They jump back in the TARDIS, jump back out, because apparently, for as long as they have lived, they've wanted nothing more than to be in the Wild West. Mm. So they go and dress as cowboys.
Or probably Woody and the other, the girl cowboy from Toy Story.
They basically look like someone's putting up a theatrical adaptation of a porno based on Dolly Parton's life.
Super camp. I mean, even camper than Dolly Parton's actual life. is how that would work. But anyway, so they come out all adorned in denim and handkerchiefs.
Yeah.
With the Doctor still clutching.
Steven looks a little bit like Marty McFly in Back to the Future 3, by the way.
Yes, a little. Again, more flamboyant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. But he's got like that whole, like, he's a rodeo clown. He's not a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, whatever. So they're now having a whale of a time, and Steven's flashing his six-shooter.
Flashing his piece.
Flashing his piece. Not compensating for anything. And then all of a sudden, someone shoots it straight out of his hand. Who is that someone? Nickelodeon, possibly Nicolelli.
The legendary, possibly one of the most famous, or infamous, probably famous. I'm going to say because he's on the right side.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the most famous, you know, mythical cowboy figures. Wyatt Earp, the sheriff. Is he a sheriff?
Sheriff or Marshall?
Marshall. No, he's a Marshall.
Marshall Werp.
Yes, Marshall Werp, as he'll become to known.
Who basically goes, you guys have to come with me because we're going to, like, Steven basically has been boasting to the Doctor, play boasting, that he's the fastest shooter in the West. And Werp goes, you're not going to live very long if you keep saying that, so you guys need to come with me. The Clantons are in town, and if you say stuff like that, they're going to shoot you, like, right off the bat. So,
yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense.
It makes no sense. He could just as well have said, stop saying stuff like
that. Stop saying that. I now need to go do Marshall things. But it turns out there are only 8 people in this town,
and
you're 3 of them. So you need to come with me so I can have you all in one room, so this job's super easy.
Even easier than it already is. Anyway, they head off.
So they head off, and then...
And we come back to the saloon, I think.
We do, where the Clantons are getting restless.
Yeah, and where we also get the... I'm sorry to cut you off there. Yep. We also get the very first of many, but not nearly enough, cleavage shots.
Oh.
Because we open this on what this is a kid's show, right? Or a family show. I'm guessing so many girls were watching this back in the 60s, and they saw this woman, and they just went like, oh, she's a princess. I want to be just like her. Little did they know that this was a woman who is employed to do 2 things. 1, sing in the saloon. 2, blow dongs. Like, that is...
Both tricky skills. Both, you know, require a decent amount of talent.
Oh, absolutely. Whatever. This is, as per usual, a very sexist episode. And also, as per usual... And thank you for pointing this out. Well, we literally just watched this, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for pointing this out, Nick. There is a rapey character, or there is a rapey scene in it.
Yeah, it's definitely on that line. It's on those blurred lines.
The blurred lines.
Like that. Robin Thicke, thanks for the rapey semantic
oh, God.
Language.
So anyway, this prostitute, she's in the saloon. Yeah. and we're about to find out she's Doc Holliday's girlfriend, or fiancé, I guess.
Paramour, yeah.
Yeah. She says that they're going to go married, right? They're going to get hitched. So she's there, she's the singer of the saloon, and she's the one who sings this shitty song, and this is the first time that we encounter the song. Let's put a pin in this. She sings the song.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think so?
I'm pretty sure she sings the song. She comes back later on, spoiler alert, and sings it, right?
Mm.
Anyway, she comes in, tits bobbing. And also, witnesses the Clantons just going crazy about how much they want to kill Holliday.
At this point, not only do they really hate signage, but bottles. Bottles really get them riled up.
Yeah, because they just shoot bottles.
Oh, God.
And also, we get the first of possibly only two line fuck-ups.
Yeah.
I think we need a soundbite.
Yes, we
sound
do.
Soundbites? Soundbites.
Now, let's get this straight. You mean you don't know where Holliday... You never met Holliday either?
Which is fantastic. All in one take, ladies and gentlemen,
absolutely.
Believe it or not.
Yeah. Got no time for rehearsing.
Yeah. So anyway, this chick, Kate, since she is Doc's girlfriend or fiancé and she's hearing the Clanton say all this stuff, she ducks out to go and warn her boyfriend. Fiancé, whatever.
She ducks out.
You're nice!
Sorry. At this point, we're, you know, only about 5-6 minutes in to the entire four-parter, and what is painfully clear is that everyone at the BBC, and possibly all of Britain in the 60s, didn't really understand what the Wild West was about.
Oh, absolutely not.
Fully had no concept of what an American accent might have sounded, not only at that time, but just in general.
Yeah.
Because it keeps slipping from the Wild West to the Archers.
Wild West country.
Yep, yeah. They'll enter a sentence in, howdy, ma'am, and then they'll be like, right, my love? Right at the end? Like, just at the end, they'll just style it out as if they were doing some farming in the Black Country, and it was just the most jarring thing. I just kept having to hold my head in my hands with... just try to concentrate on the plot.
That was one of the main things we laughed about just a moment. We finished watching this, 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Something like that. Throughout the entire thing, make fun of their accents.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic.
There's possibly only one character that carried the accent.
Doc Holliday.
Yeah. Doc Holliday, whoever played Doc Holliday, managed to at least be consistent.
Yeah. And he is, like, such a weird guy. Anyway, we're going to meet him just in just a moment now. So, what's her face? Kate. We need to find a name for her. She goes, warns... This is going to get really confusing. Holliday. Yeah.
Chesty LaRue and Holliday.
Chesty LaRue and... Oh, I like it. Chesty LaRue. I think we've already had Chesty La Hot Pants or Hot Lips. I can't remember. Tight Buns. Chesty McTight Buns. Yeah, she turned up in the Crusade.
So, Chesty LaRue goes to warn her paramour, Doc Holliday, and we find him setting up... His new venture, his new business that he's super excited about. He's back in Tombstone where he belongs. He's on Main Street and he's got himself a nice...
Dentist surgery.
Yeah, a dentist surgery, barber, like a cure-all type of...
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
I thought he was a dentist.
I think in that period your barber was your surgeon and your dentist and your everything, I assume.
Okay, like, no, that makes sense. When we were watching this, I'm sorry by the way, I am not very au fait with the actual historical background here, but when we were watching this, at one point I was he actually a doctor? Like, I thought that was just a nickname.
No, I think it is a nickname. I think that he was that, like I said, that barber come dentist come surgeon type of deal.
Cool.
Quack, as it were.
Well, the main spiel that he's doing here is he's a dentist anyway, regardless of whether that's historically
the
accurate or not.
The plot mover here is that he's a dentist and the doctor needs a dentist.
Exactly. So she goes, warns him, he goes, well, that's crazy, blah, 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 blah. All of a sudden, enter the Doc Hammer saying, well, you know what, I'm really sorry, I've got a toothache. And as he enters, also, he kind of interrupts them. It is coitus interruptus.
Oh, yeah.
It is in flagrante delicto. He opens the door, and there they are. Like, Doc Holliday is practically fingering her.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he goes, well, you don't know what? You're my first customer. Points a fucking gun at him.
Yeah.
He services him at gunpoint.
Yep. And the doctor, weirdly, is kind of cool with it.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, oh, I don't want to intrude. And then he gets a gun pointed in his face. And he's like, I need a dentist. Okay, gun doesn't go away at this point. He's like, oh, you're actually a patron of mine. I'm going to put my projectile weapon away and tend to your needs. But no, gun stays out this entire time. And the doctor's like, okay.
Can I have some anesthetics?
Yeah, it's like, it's whiskey or shut up.
Yeah, or I can, what is it?
Pistol
whip you on the cranium.
And the doctor's like, I don't think I like any of those treatment options. Can I check with my healthcare provider?
I'm on the NHS, you see.
But it's just like, open wide and I'll yank out your human, like human skull. Like,
Doc
Holliday quite clearly doesn't know that he's a Time Lord, and we're just led to believe that.
Yeah, we were saying this earlier. Like, do Time Lords have regular human style teeth?
Even if they do have regular, do they have the same like clotting agent in which you just yank one out of his head and he'll just be like, "Yeah, I'm cool. I'll just." That's fine. It's not a problem. Just yank a tooth out of my head.
Yeah, also, let's take a moment to mull this over. The Doctor is now missing a tooth. Like, he has a freaking TARDIS. Sooner or later, they're going to end up in Earth's future, right? They can bob around time and space all they want. At some point, they're going to be in the future. Why not leave the dentistry until they're in a time where there are anesthetics and where, like, he can just get a pill or something that fixes his tooth?
Maybe he could regenerate single teeth? Yeah, I'm going to go for that.
Why not? Tennant regenerated a hand.
That's true. That was such bullshit, by the way. But anyway, back to Classic Who.
Okie dokie. So now Doc is there. Doc Holliday jumps. Oh, it's so confusing. Holliday jumps in into the back again to probably keep fingering his missus. And then all of a sudden, one of these dudes.
The Clanton's messengers.
Yeah.
Harper? Seth Harper? I want to call him Seth Harper.
Okay, I think you're probably right about that. He's basically the Baldwin who isn't a Baldwin. Like, he's the Clanton named something else. Seth Harper, I like it. He immediately assumes that the Doc is the Doc, as in Holliday.
Yeah.
And, sure, why not? We've seen something very similar in other historicals. We saw this in The Reign of Terror. During the French Revolution, the Doctor was immediately, like, mistaken for some French official. And in this case, kind of fair play, because with the exception of Doc Holliday's mustache, they kind of look alike. Like, they're wearing the same clothes, more or less. They're both men of a certain age.
Hang on. There's quite clearly, like, 20 to 30 years between them, I reckon. As well as one's very British.
Yeah, well, aside from... No one seems to care about accents in this thing. Dodo, by the way, she slips in and out of her fake American accents even when she's speaking to other people who keep their fake American accents.
Or try to.
No one seems to care about that. This guy, clearly not American, clearly an English old man. is just mistaken for Doc Holliday. I also want to say, kind of fair play, because he is referred to as the Doctor, and he obviously goes, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
If you're not
willing to elaborate on your name, you're going to have to get some shit, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, we have also received an alibi for them. As in, when they... Shit, we completely skipped it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm really sorry about that. So when they're taken out of the feed, whatever, by Werp, this is pre-dentist office, they bump into some other hotshot sheriff and are immediately let go. Like, they were being taken to the police station or the sheriff's office or whatever, and then are all of a sudden immediately let go because the Doctor goes, I am Dr. Caligari.
Oh, yes.
And these are my two fellow thespians, Stephen Regret, awesome name, by the way, who is a singer, and Dodo Dupont, who is a pianist.
Yes.
It turns out, by the way, being a pianist...
Super easy.
Easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, knock out a concerto whenever you feel like. So it's a nice little homage to the Dr. Caligari. We had to look it up because it felt super familiar to us. And it's Dr. Caligari. The cabinet of Dr. Caligari is considered one of the first ever horror films. It's a German silent horror film, which I'm pretty sure I've seen it. And it was creepy as hell.
We Wikipedia'd it, and the guy is like... He's almost like a mesmerist. Like, he has some somnambulist locked up in a cabinet and occasionally will hypnotize him into seeing the future / killing people.
Yeah, yeah.
So why does the Doc, who is a good guy, the Time Lord, the Doctor, why does he give himself the alias Dr. Caligari?
Well, because the cabinet being his TARDIS, I don't know, and like...
Yeah, no, that's nice, but he is also...
A freaky killer guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's like Captain Jack Harkness introducing himself as Jack the Ripper in some episode because he wants to go incognito.
I don't know.
That's
weird.
Anyway,
I liked it as sort of maybe a cinematography callback thing, like a director's wink to, like, I don't know,
Whoever directed to the cabinet of Caligari in whenever it was, the 40s or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably like...
The 20s.
Like 40 years earlier, he is now
just
obviously...
On his deathbed going, thank you. I can die now.
Okay, anyway. So we cut back to the saloon where once again we hear this song. It's called The Last Chance Saloon, right? No, sorry, The Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon. And now the Steve Meister and Dildo, they enter the saloon to get some rooms. And they all obviously drop, the Doctor will be joining us soon. So the Clantons hear this, go, shitballs, they're talking about Doc Holliday. Mm. We're now going to hold these people hostage until he turns up. So, actually, this is all, like, in a weird order, isn't it?
Yeah, they do that sort of
They weird... do that before Seth Harper.
Well, they do that sort of weird thing that we make cowboys or killers or murderers do in loads of different types of, like, popular culture. Instead of just going, hey, this would be a good decision if we just held them hostage, they're like, no, we're going to psychologically fuck with them first. Like, let's make them sing songs for us at gunpoint.
The same song over and over again.
Yeah, like, the same song, like, five times, and then double time, and then shit. It's just like, we can't just point them... sit them down at gunpoint and say, take us to your mate.
Yeah.
And then we will sort this situation out.
Yeah.
But it's just, nah, you gotta sing for us. Whilst I shoot whiskey
monkey,
bottles.
Dance. Yeah. Okay, so we've got the order a little bit messed up here. So they do that. Then Seth Harper goes to find the Doctor, takes him to be Doc Holliday, tells him, come back to the saloon, I've got some mates, they want to talk to you. Fast forward again, now the Doctor arrives at the saloon, Dodo is playing the piano like she was born playing the piano. Like, she originally said, yeah, I might be able to bash something out.
She plays it like she invented the fucking thing.
Yeah. Like, she's literally just looked at this piece of paper with the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon for maybe 10 seconds, and then just plays it, la 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 la, like, looking over her shoulder.
Which, by the way, how conceited do you have to be as the landlord of the Last Chance Saloon that you commission a song about your fucking bar and then keep it?
Yeah, but this is why the song makes no sense to me, because the song basically, every verse, coincidentally, every verse of this song explains what is currently happening in the story.
But that is like in Greek tragedies and, oh, not Greek tragedy, you know, like in sort of the classics, that was like a choral thing, like the chorus would say.
Yeah, or you have someone reciting everything in rhyme, like, this is what's happening.
Or just say, like, you know, what's coming for, or even foreshadowing and stuff. They were basically like omnipotent weird people.
Yes, but that is also the song that the Kate, singer, prostitute, whatever,
Chesty LaRue,
that's the song that she is quote unquote famous for singing. Right?
Yeah.
Because then when she, like, for some reason, she leaves Doc Holliday's office and turns up in the saloon. And when she does that, so the Doc is already there. This is all over the place. Who gives a shit? So the Doc is there. He's already been mistaken for Doc Holliday. No one gives a shit about him saying, "Or like, listen, you're kind of mistaken. I'm English." Mm. And then all of a sudden.
And old.
And Chesty LaRue turns up and is just infuriated by the fact that the Steve Meister and the Dildomatron are, like, usurping her throne as the singer of the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon, and then immediately starts singing it herself. Mm. And now she tells Dildo, go fuck yourself. Steven, who doesn't play piano, sit down over there and play the piano, and then he does, looking over his shoulder, very well. Mm. Like, it makes no sense. But the reason... Twice as fast, yeah, double time. And the reason this makes no sense to me is that this is now her song. This is clearly a song that they would perform within the universe, right? Mm. This is not a narrative thing, but then later on, it turns into one.
I think we can separate those things. I think we can separate the song within the actual plot itself and then the choral, like, playback.
You mean like the voiceover song version?
Absolutely, yeah. This voiceover song part is a narrative device, and the one within it is just part of its universe.
Okay, that's actually a fair
point. We'll separate those.
That is a fair point.
However,
okay.
There's there's quite a lot to, you know, Kate being this sort of, like, she comes back and she's like, what, you know, it's like, you left your post as a singer. Why are you so upset? Like, you left it at the drop of a hat.
No, you're right. You're very right. Also, do you know what else we've forgotten? Mm. I'm sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen. Episode one ended a while ago. We're now in episode two.
This is the end of episode the start of episode two is called Don't Shoot the Pianist.
Yeah.
And it is it's Steven, who's not actually the pianist in this scenario, because Dildo is supposed to be the pianist, but Steven is the pianist that we don't want to shoot.
This is going to be all over the place. Henceforth, we're going to be very structured. Scout's honor. The Doctor turns up, yada yada yada, we don't know who's who, very entertaining, whatever, blah blah blah. Fuck, we've forgotten so many details. Doc Holliday gave him his gun.
Yes, okay, so to go back to this. No, we can clean this up. I feel like it's within us and within the purview of our listenership to clean this up. So,
okay, go for it.
Okay, so back in the barbers, the dentists, is Doc Holliday and the doctor and Kate at this point. All right, so I'm going back.
Yeah, going back to episode
going back
one.
Of, yeah, okay, back yeah. To the end of episode one. So Kate, the doctor, and Doc Holliday. And Seth Harper, the Baldwin that's not a Baldwin,
yeah.
comes in.
Baldwin, let's just call him Baldwin.
Let's just call him Baldwin. His name is Seth Harper, but we'll call him Baldwin. And, you know, mistakes him for Doc Holliday. Doc Holliday out of earshot, out of sight, but within earshot.
Yeah, he hears this.
And is initially quite pleased that, you know, the doctor's going to take his place,
yeah.
you know, at the, you know, the hands of the Clantons. So he fits him out with, you know, oh, you can't leave without a gun, and he gives him his personalized.
Yeah, here's my signature gun.
Yeah, absolutely. With my name on it, and it's et cetera, and a hat, and sends him on his way off to his doom.
Yeah, and then even says out loud, thinking that Kate is still there, but Kate, Chesty LaRue, she's already gone back to the saloon. Mm. He says, oh, this is great. The Clantons are going to kill this old dude. And then I'm going to assume a new identity and they're going to think that I'm dead.
Yeah.
Let's put a pin in that. Get back to that later on. So fast forward, end of episode one, episode two, don't shoot the pianist. Fast forward even more. Mm. Boom. Take it away.
Great. So at this juncture, we've got their sort of kind of Mexican standoffy type of situation in which basically the Clantons have got everyone in the saloon and they're going to make them pay.
Yeah.
Going to make them pay. And then out of nowhere, as the doctor is fumbling around with his gun that he didn't want to have in the first place, someone gets shot. The Baldwin. Baldwin gets shot.
Baldwin gets shot.
The Baldwin gets shot.
Oh, God damn it. I'm so heartbroken.
Yes.
And who shot him?
Well, seemingly, the doctor, the old doddery quick draw that he is, so the Clantons throw up their arms in terror and line up against the wall as if the doctor's going to mow them all down in cold blood.
Yeah, and this makes no sense.
Absolutely no sense. Because, A, they've all got guns. And we're already, like, planning to kill him. Surely they would use this opportunity as a melee whilst Baldwin has been shot.
Yeah.
To then murder the Doctor, or Doc Holliday, as they think he is. And then that's...
And that's it.
That's
like, that would be it. The end of serial.
Yeah.
But also, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to return to this pin right away. Mm. He is shot. Baldwin is shot by the actual Doc Holliday, who has tagged along because he wants to save his Chesty LaRue bride-to-be, right?
And presumably come in from a back way and snuck upstairs and took advantage
of he did that, Lord only knows. Absolutely. But he is now, like, upstairs, shoots the gun out of Baldwin's hands, and thus... Yeah, exactly. He doesn't kill Baldwin. He shoots the gun out of his hand. But in doing so, he rescues the doc. Hmm. But it's in his interest to see the doc killed. So now he's effectively postponed this assumption of a new identity for himself.
It is a weird cognitive dissonance. That
it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. Surely you just let it all play out and not give a... Oh, but then he does later say that because Chesty LaRue was down there, that he was protecting her because she could have got hurt. Do you remember he says that?
Yeah, also true. Yeah. You know what he could also have done? Hmm. He could have just shot the doc. He could have shot the doc, and one of the Clantons, or possibly Baldwin, obviously were just going to go, it was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boom. Problem solved.
Yeah. Also, he shoots him with, like, a Dillinger, which is, like, a tiny, 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 tiny little gun.
Yeah.
Like a purse-sized gun.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing you imagine stuck in, like, a garter belt.
Yeah.
Hot.
Is that hot?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Let's glaze over that fact.
Yeah. Guns and hosiery don't do it for me, but ladies and gentlemen, if it's your thing.
Yum. Okay, anyway.
So, Dodo was banished to her room.
Yeah, so she now turns up again, sees Doc Holliday on the stairs.
Yeah, Doc Holliday does the only thing that you can do with a character like Dodo, which is take her hostage, because she's not really a person. She's just
I think technically, like, biologically she qualifies as one, but, like, in terms of character, backbone, and interest, no.
Yeah, I want to quickly put a note under there, just in case sarcasm doesn't come across the wet airways. We think of women as humans, but the writers at the BBC at this particular junction in history apparently don't.
Good save.
I don't know what is it, but they cannot make a three-dimensional character out of any sort of woman.
Was for a while,
Dodo is pretty much just a hostage or a nuisance.
Yeah.
Those are two...
Vicky was the same, Susie, same. Yeah. It's just a mark of the times, unfortunately.
Yeah. But anyway.
Anyway, so, yeah, don't worry about it. Your character is safe.
Doc Holliday takes her hostage for no particular reason, just that she was going to cause a fracas and maybe draw attention to him.
Yeah, or tell the Clantons that Doc Holliday is there.
Yeah, and not the Doctor. Yeah. So within this, so the Doctor has got all the Clantons, you know, up against the wall with their arms in the air. And
Warp turns up.
Warp and the Sheriff.
Yeah,
and
the non-wise Erp.
Like, yeah, the non-wise Erp.
Mastersons, who is, what are we going to call him? He's not Baldwin, he is Arquette.
Bat Masterson. He's the son of the Master of Bats. Everything was very literal in the Wild West. But anyway, Bat Masterson, the Sheriff, and Wyatt Earp turn up. Actually, this is a fairly baffling point plot for me.
Yeah, it also makes sense to me.
I don't get this. So Wyatt Earp, who knows full well who Doc Holliday is, because they have a famous friendship that's alluded to in the series already by the Clanton, saying that Wyatt Earp won't help them do anything because they're such good friends with Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
And for some, so Wyatt Earp knows who the Doctor is because he's met him earlier in his blue box.
Yeah.
He knows who Doc Holliday is because I don't know what their relationship, it's of an intimate nature.
But he still pretends that the Doc is Doc Holliday.
For some reason, and so as the Clantons continue to think that the Doctor is Doc Holliday, for seemingly no value.
I think his plan, even though it's not very well structured within the plot of the story, I think his plan is get the Doc in jail so that he is quote-unquote safe there, and in the meantime go and warn Doc Holliday, tell him to get the shit out of Dodge because they're friends.
Which is kind of what happened, yeah.
It is kind of what happens, and then afterwards he'll probably go, actually, you know what, Clantons, my mistake, this guy is not Doc Holliday.
I just think that... If you're trying to protect a bunch of people, or maybe two people, the innocent Doctor and then the less innocent Doc Holliday, from the murderous rampage of these
brothers. Clantons and Baldwin, they are fucking criminals. If you are the Sheriff, Worf.
It's not like they're going to say... they're going to say, oh, well, you've waited an appropriate amount of times. It's been 24 hours. I guess our bloodlust has been sated. Like, they'll just wait an extra damn day and then shoot the Doctor and then probably go find Doc... You know, like...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
So at this juncture, Wyatt arrests the Doctor.
Takes him to the prison.
Doc Holliday.
And then Kate pops upstairs to find Doc Holliday and Dildo.
Shacked up.
Not banging, weirdly. We speculate a little bit why that might be. Not going to share our theories, I think. But then anyway. So now they have to hole up in this hotel room, and like this saloon, whatever room. Mm. It's a hotel. Let's call it a hotel. Whatever. They have to stay there, so they play some cards. And they're just going to wait it out, basically. Then...
As Wyatt Earp has taken the Doctor away, he has just left Stephen to his fate.
Yeah, you're right.
So Stephen just, like, so, you know, at some point the Clantons go, oh, they left this fucker behind.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden, Stephen becomes... I think he believes the Clantons, by the way.
For a little while, there is a junction which the Clantons are talking to him, and... No. Yeah. Initially, they say... He says that I need to break the Doctor out of prison, and they all have a great old laugh at that and say, oh, well, if you want to break the Doctor out of prison, you need a gun and to face Wyatt Earp. As a joke. Then there's a bit of a cutscene. We go somewhere else for a little while.
Yeah, we go to the... Oh my god, this is so worthy of a screenshot. Oh, seriously.
Yeah.
So we cut to the jail where the Doctor is reading a massive wanted poster. And I really just want to point out, there is a fucking honest-to-God, straight-up, down-to-earth photo on this poster. Like, it is a photo of some gunslinger holding a gun in, like, a badass pose. Back in the day, you had to stand still for, like, a good 20 minutes or something to have your picture taken badly.
That might be a slight exaggeration, but I do
Surely they wouldn't get a gunslinger to, like, strike a Stallone pose.
You can find, like, certain like, cowboys and stuff, like, you know, you could find... There are photos of them, because I guess it was a part of the glamour and stuff, you know. But not that many. Not like every single... It wasn't like some database that you went to and just like, oh, we need one of Doc Holliday. Like, so it's only really sporadic. Like, really, really sporadic and rare that someone might have a photo that they could add to a wand. But probably not. Probably just like a artist impression or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
I feel like there would have been drawings rather than photos on these things.
But anyway, this thing was giant and quite clear.
Someone went on Shutterstock.com and punched in cowboy.
Yeah.
That was it.
yeah, that was pretty good. So there was just generic doctors in jail.
Yeah.
A little bit of exposition from Werp.
Yeah. And Werp, cut to Werp now, popping into the dentist surgery, confronting Doc Holliday.
Yes.
And just like...
you need to get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
Not Dodge, because that was a real city.
You get the shit out of Tombstone.
Yes.
And that's pretty much it. And the Doc Holliday has basically just gone back to his surgery because he wants booze.
Yes.
That's so weird as well.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, I'm not sure of Doc Holliday and his actual historic bent, but let's say he was a much, you know, he was a boozer and a gambler.
If you are to believe Val Kilmer's portrayal of him in Tombstone, then yeah.
Okay, cool. So he's a boozer and a gambler. The thing is in this serial is that he does a lot of boozing, a very small amount of gambling with his fiance.
Yeah, with Chessie LaRue and Dodo.
Yeah.
sorry, Dildo.
Which is odd. So he does a lot of boozing, neither of which have any consequences. It's not like he's drunk and...
Oh,
like,
there is
like,
zero consequences.
There is zero consequences for
in this kids show, there is so much boozing. There are tons of prostitutes all over the place. Like, every woman you see, except for Dildo, is a prostitute.
I can't remember any other woman other than...
Oh, there's another saloon scene later on where they're like, oh, these are the women of the saloon, i.e. the prostitutes, right before the whole hanging business, whatever.
Oh,
spoiler alert, people.
Yeah.
People get shot and killed.
Yes.
There's smoking.
Yep.
And there are death threats.
No blood.
No blood. Oh, you're
lots
right.
Shooting. No blood.
No reloading.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So, come back at to this the hotel. Point, yeah, where at somehow, even though Stephen is privy to most of the information that we've just told you, weird freak of him, like, losing his theory of mind and understanding how, like, you know, just the world works, they've managed to convince him that they're all good guys, and as soon as they bust, you know, the doctor out of jail, they'll just, you know, and...
we're going to have a chat.
Yeah, this will be great. That's not a problem. The same guys that were, you know, forcing him to play this song at gunpoint, like, no more than 15 minutes earlier, they're good guys. They're going to help.
It makes zero sense.
Absolutely no
sense. And for a moment there, I remember thinking, myself anyway, thinking, oh, he's faking it now. Like, he's got a gun, he's now going to go and bust the doc out, but he's got a plan. But then when he actually turns up at the prison, like, and he hands Doc the gun, all he does is relay the Clanton's plan. He's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I need to get you out of here. We've got 10 minutes. Take this gun.
But the doctor, I mean, one of the slightly better Hartnell moments in this entire series just goes, yeah, gun. And then just promptly gives the gun over to Wyatt Earp and says, I'm fine here.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy I hang out with sometimes is a fucking moron.
Basically what he said. That is actually what he said.
Yeah.
And he even, like, the sheriff or marshal or whatever, what's his name again?
Wyatt Earp.
No, it's not Wyatt Earp. It's,
No, it's Earp that he gives the gun to, I think.
Oh, is it? Yeah, I thought it was Arquette.
Or Bat Masterson.
Bat Masterson. Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, whoever it is, I'm pretty sure that he goes, well, if your mate Steve Meister gave you this gun, I definitely need to speak to him, i.e. get him arrested and possibly hanged for this offense. Mm. And the doc basically just goes, yeah, I think that's a brilliant idea. Let's just go for it. Do your job. Cut back to the saloon. Steve Meister turns up.
Quick note to say, we're not that inattentive. It's just all these guys in moustaches look the same. That's not a weird, like, it's not a profiling thing.
Such a racist. Such a racist statement.
I didn't
everyone with a moustache just looks the same to you.
I didn't realise that the top lip was such, like, an expressive part of someone's face.
Dude, every follicle counts.
God. I'm not, sometimes I'm just like, which one's that? It's like, I don't know, Mustachio Pete. And then we just move on.
That's what he was, that was his name.
That was his name, Mustachio
Pete. That was Bad Masterson.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad Masterson.
Mustachio Pete.
Mustachio Pete. Okay. Which makes sense. I think if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Okay, so we're approaching the end of episode 2 here now. Steve Meister pops back into the saloon. At this point, we've got this crazy mob forming in the saloon. This is where we get to see the other prostitutes.
Mm.
I mean, I don't want to seem like I'm a sexist saying this. I'm pretty fucking sure they are prostitutes. So, Baldwin, I think it is, or possibly one of the Clantons, the one with, like, the worst accent, the one who speaks like a robot.
Yes. like a West Country robot.
He sounds like a toaster.
Yes.
Anyway.
Sounds like a toaster that does English muffins.
Oh, nice. Nice. Very good accent work. Well done. So this guy is now telling this mob, Doc Holliday, he's the bane of our existence. Everyone seems to go along with this. By the way, all these people, they've essentially welcomed Doc Holliday shortly before. They've welcomed him as the new dentist in town. So he's now saying he's
this
the bane
mob
of our existence.
Came out of nowhere as well. We've not seen anyone else in this entire town for like two episodes.
The saloon,
and then they're all
which...
like, oh yeah, we love a good lynching.
Also, is it just me or is it suddenly nighttime? Like a moment ago it was daytime. Now it's nighttime.
Anyway, so whatever. So they stir up a lynching and...
Because Steve hasn't got the doc out, they're now going to lynch Steve instead.
The impassioned speech is, we all hate Doc Holliday. Isn't he a murderous slag pile? We need to
murder him
and lynch him, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, and if we don't do that, we're going to lynch this guy, Steven. And everyone goes, okay.
That makes sense.
I mean, we were all on board with the righteous lynching. But if we can't get any righteous lynching, I guess some innocent fucker will do. I mean, it's like pizza, you know. Even when it's bad, it's good. They just lynch anyone. So anyway, they take Steven off, hog tie him, parade him around the streets to be lynched, march him over to
the sheriff's office
to say, if you don't give us the doctor, we're going to lynch this, you know, guy that looks like Woody from Toy Story.
Yeah. End of episode 2. Episode 3, Johnny Ringo. Such
Which,
a good name.
At this point, none of you, that won't make any sense. didn't make any sense to us at the time.
No, is Johnny Ringo an actual person?
Let's wiki him right now. So, okay, whilst I do that, John Peters Ringo, known as John Ringo, was an outlaw member of the Cowboys of Cochise County?
Cochise. Okay.
Oh, and was affiliated with Ike Clanton, who features in this episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, this episode is perfectly historically accurate.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think we need to check any other facts.
No, I think if you scroll further down that Wikipedia page, you're going to find a reference to the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, episode 3, Johnny Ringo starts off with the lynch mob arriving outside the sheriff's office. Yada, 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 rah, 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 we're going to kill Steve Meister unless you give us Doc Holliday. Why is Earp, a.k.a. Werp, or Bat Masterson, a.k.a. Mustachio Pete, still will not tell anyone that this guy is not Doc Holliday? Like, they still are not doing this. So instead, Werp goes, listen, guys, I'm going to go out the back, I'm going to circle around these dweebs, and then I'm going to shoot them from behind. In fact, no, it's later on,
Absolutely.
Right? It's later on, yeah. Oh, God, fantastic soundbite coming up, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, he says this, and then, just because we have had enough tension in this episode, he does this. And with no problem whatsoever. He circles around the back.
Yeah, so basically, on one side there's Wyatt Earp with his one gun.
Yeah.
On the other side, there's Mustachio Pete with his one gun.
Mustachio Pete has a rifle aimed at Billy Clanton.
Yeah. And then there's the rest of the Clantons with all their guns.
Yeah.
And they think, no, we don't fancy this much.
We're not going to shoot them yet. We're not going to fire
absolutely.
A gun.
So they.
You don't look anything like a bottle.
Yeah.
I'm not going to shoot you.
Or a sign. Signs. One thing we hate more than Doc Holliday. Anyway, so they give it up. They give Steven up. They give the doctor up. And they all just disperse and go home.
Yeah, basically.
Regroup and hang for another day.
Yeah, and also, weirdly, so Werp, he circled around, he pistol whips someone, one of the Clantons, whoever it is, one of the Clantons.
Oh, the stuttery Clanton.
Yeah, so he pistol whips him, the other Clantons go, wait, what the fuck is going on? Like, this is insane, we're gonna shoot you. And Werp goes, yeah, but he's a criminal, we're gonna arrest him, you guys leave. But they are all equally guilty of the crime that he's accusing the dude he's just pistol whipped. He says, I will arrest him for an attempted hanging. Everyone there just attempted to hang someone. Like, everyone. Werp, your job is to arrest everyone in this situation. Not just one person and tell all the other guilty people to leave because they're equally guilty and therefore shouldn't be arrested. This makes zero sense. But that is exactly what happens. And then, the bartender, whom we've really not mentioned in this case, Charlie, the dude who's like the sweatiest little herpetic dweeb bastard ever.
Yeah, there are so many murderous people in this like, serial.
But he is still the most loathsome.
I hate him.
He's disgusting. He's so sweaty and gross and herpetic.
Yeah.
He turns up and goes, listen, guys, Clantons, I'm going to tell you the truth now. The real Doc Holliday is not in that sheriff's office. He's in the bar. And in fact, he just shot one of your bros. And we failed to mention that as well. It's so chaotic,
Seth
this review.
Seth Rogen died earlier.
Was it Seth Rogen?
Yeah, Seth Rogen.
Baldwin. Sorry, that's what his name is. Yeah.
Baldwin died
at the hands of Doc Holliday. Now Charlie, a.k.a. Herpetic Bartender. Herpetic Bob?
Herpetic Bob.
Herpetic Bob turns up, goes, listen, that's not Doc. Doc's in the saloon. saloon. He just bolted to some other city and he killed one of your bros. So now...
For no apparent reason. I don't know why the bartender needed, like...
I think he's just like a goody two-shoes kind of dude who wants to get in with all
anyone.
Of the criminals.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone that would listen to him and won't recoil at his touch.
He's actually not that far off from the bartender or... No, it's the hotelier in... what's it called? What's that Wild West series?
Oh,
it's
of a that one.
No, the one that was like a huge success. It was like an HBO or... No, it was an AMC, I think, Wild West series. Oh, shit,
I
man.
Don't know,
dude,
man.
We're going to IMDb this right now. Sorry.
Okay. Well, anyway, so as Charlie, the bartender, Herpetic Bob, slithers off on his underbelly.
Herpetic Bob. Yeah. What a guy.
Absolutely. So we're at this point where you're obviously building towards some sort of big clan shootout. So the Clantons introduce their father into the situation,
yeah.
Who is simultaneously an outlaw like them,
yeah.
But also powerful enough to afford a sharpshooter to accompany them. They need another outlaw, a mercenary, a hired gun,
yeah.
As it were.
And that they do in the form of... Johnny Ringo. Such a dude.
Yeah, right.
Such a fantastic dude.
Actually a real guy, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone should have told the actor playing him.
I thought he was pretty cool.
I don't know. He was a terrible pastiche. Also couldn't quite stick the accent.
Really?
I thought that he was either going to play Johnny Ringo or sell me a pack of Marlboro. Like, that was this guy's intention. Like, he was... It's like he'd quite clearly grown up in Scunthorpe and thought, this is what a cowboy must look like. But anyway, yeah. Just like a really shitty John Wayne and or Marlboro guy.
Deadwood. That's the name of the show, by the way. Right. Sorry, just interjecting that.
Cool.
That is of no value to anyone.
Yeah.
Anyway, Johnny Ringo.
So they talk about hiring Johnny Ringo, who's obviously quite some sort of legendary outlaw marksman, who also has a vendetta
against Doc Holliday,
which
Why?
Is a love... some I don't know, some...
Oh, you know what? No, it's Kate. It's Chesty LaRue. Yeah, because Johnny Ringo, he used to fancy the pants of
They used to be lovers, because the choral callback tells us, see?
Oh,
it
you're
is
right.
Actually,
oh, well done. Yep. Well done, singers. But now Doc Holliday is constantly slipping her the willy, and now he wants to kill Doc Holliday for that reason.
Yeah. I think we might be overstretching with that interpretation, but you just not do that. It's fine.
What are you telling me that you
said?
Wait, you do not think that they ever bone?
Oh, no, they totally bone.
They bone all the time. That is all they do. They bone, smoke, gamble, drink. That's it.
When we're told of Johnny Ringo's, like, vendetta against Doc Holliday,
yeah.
I don't think we're expressly told it's over Kate. I think that might be...
He says that later, though.
Yeah,
that's the rapey scene. That's where he... spoiler alert. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Spoilers. So later on, when they meet up and he sees Kate, he goes, listen, I've been following you for ages and now I'm here. So now you're going to come with me and I'm going to finger you upstairs. Pretty sure that's a direct quote, man.
Verbatim.
Okay, whatever. Rewind. So
they're all going to basically ambush the Earps.
Somewhere. Yeah. Well, slash kill Doc Holliday. Like, yeah. I think that's probably the main priority at this point. It's not so much kill Herb, it's kill Holliday.
Yes, yeah.
I think. Yeah. Anyway.
So the Clantons are in the saloon, conspiring to murder, and the Earps are in the jail, the county jail, with the statutory Clanton that they have in custody.
Yes.
And then a young Earp has joined them.
Yes, yeah, young exactly, Earp, whatever his name is. The only Earp without a mustache.
The only Earp without a mustache.
The unmustachioed Earp.
Yeah. You get one when you kill a man.
Oh, you're right. That's exactly what happened. It actually just grows like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Poof. Plops out of your face.
Every time you murder a man, an Earp gets his moustache.
It's like fairy wings.
There's young Earp, there's Bat Masterson, the white Earp. Virgil Earp is en route.
Another
mustachio guy who's come to bolster the ranks of the Earps against the Clantons.
Yeah, and he's like a sheriff in a different city or
also,
something.
Also, by the way, so we've been talking for like last 10 minutes. Is the doctor
zero?
Like, has absolutely no input.
No, not at all. He is in this episode or in this serial more than he was in The Celestial Toymaker. But again, for those of you who haven't seen or heard the review of Celestial Toymaker, around about this time, and in Celestial Toymaker in particular, the producers really wanted Hartnell off the show.
Mm.
So now he is still on the show. He's got an extension on his contract. But they really did try to just force him out. And presumably this is one of the factors leading to him not having much of a part.
Yeah. He is to this storyline as is Clint Eastwood to Star Wars A New Hope. That's how I feel about this situation.
Really?
Yeah, he is so far removed from the story.
I don't think so.
I think at this juncture, we could continue this entire podcast without having to watch the Doctor, really.
Okay,
as a plot driver.
Well, I kind of disagree, because there are a couple of scenes where he turns up, but only
a
couple.
Yeah, he turns up.
I feel like, you know what it is? The Doctor is Red 5 in Empire Strikes Back. Do you remember Red 5?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Only barely. That's the Doctor in this one.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe my Clint Eastwood analogy was too heavy-handed. Cheerfully withdrawn. Anyway.
Okay. So what happens?
So the young Earp, whilst Wyatt Earp and Bat Masterson go off
to do
some police business.
Yeah, not sure what they do.
In charge of the county jail with the remaining Clanton that's in prison.
In prison.
Yeah, in jail.
And then all of a sudden, Kablamatron, the other Clantons, burst in.
Basically.
Yeah,
and shoot young.
He's still alive, but he is shot. And he is dying. And in the meantime, back in the saloon, Johnny Ringo turns up, drinks about 7 pints of whiskey, and then for no reason whatsoever, really, shoots Charlie.
Yeah.
Her petting.
I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with it as well.
I'm okay with it. But he just for no reason at all. Which seems really, he has no foresight. Like, he shoots him, then he goes off to bed, doesn't he, or something. And he comes back down, he's like, damn.
Yeah.
Could have got this breakfast in bed malarkey's no good without someone to serve me. He just shot the fucking bartender. Anyway.
Yeah.
He shot the bartender for no apparent reason, I guess it sets the scene for him being a bloodthirsty.
Yeah. He is, like, a good-for-nothing, completely untrustworthy guy.
Yeah. So we cut back to the prison, or the county jail, where young Earp is dying in Wyatt Earp's arms.
Okay.
Basically that, He's fairly lucidly going, saying some things and then he dies. And then Wyatt Earp, that's his breaking point. That's when Wyatt Earp says, right, screw this, I'm not a marshal anymore. We're doing this.
Yeah.
The OK Corral, and we're going to, go family for family. And at this point, they're 4-2, aren't they?
There's also, around about the same, it doesn't actually really matter in which order we say this, because they're all sort of parallel narratives, but around about the same time, we get these cutscenes of Doc Holliday, Chesty LaRue, and Dildo arriving in, the neighbouring town.
Yeah, they actually do skip town, but not very far, because obviously, Doc Holliday's thirsty, and he doesn't want to stray too far.
Yeah, and he wants some pancakes.
He wants to come back.
So they go into this other hotel, where he is obviously not the best of the good guys, but he is also presented as kind of a cheerful, jolly, good guy hero, like an anti-hero kind of guy.
Yeah.
He straight up murders someone over pancakes.
Yeah, it's just like, you hear just off-screen, 8 shots, which is odd for a six-shooter, but it's 8 shots.
But not in this serial.
Yeah, absolutely not. He 8 shots, and then he just comes back holding a tray, which you think the other person would have dropped if you shot him 8 times.
Probably.
With his tray with, some pancakes on it.
Yeah.
Which is like, dude.
And he's got a killer one-liner as well. Yeah. He goes, I met an old friend, but he's lost his appetite.
Yeah.
It's like, that's kind of mean.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
So that's the Doc Holliday, the sequence, and then we're back at the Earps versus the Clantons.
Wait, hang on. At some point, we need to get the Doctor being deputized and told to go meet Papa Clanton. Is that now? I feel like that's now.
Yeah. Okay.
Or shall we just skip to that?
It makes so little difference.
No one cares. Let's just get through episode 3. So,
the Doctor is so inconsequential to this entire fucking thing. So at some point, Bat Masterson or Wyatt Earp says, your deputy, go talk to Pub Clanton to try de-escalate things.
Yeah.
And he goes,
Actually, wait, hang on.
You should de-escalate things. And Pub Clanton goes, nah.
You know what? Now I'm thinking that's probably in episode 4.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it probably is. Doesn't give... It honestly does not matter whatsoever. So anyway, the Werps have arrived or returned to the prison. They find the younger brother, blah, blah. Warfare. Everything's going to be totally shit. And then the dog and Steven meets Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
Right? And Ringo and Steve Meister now decide they're going to go to this neighbouring town to find Doc Holliday, because Ringo Starr, he wants to find Chesty LaRue, and the Steve Meister wants to find Dildo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Off they go. And Doc basically just goes to bed.
Pretty much.
I think he actually does go to bed.
Yep.
Yeah. And isn't
he's old. Give him a break.
Okay, that's very true. And he probably still has a toothache. But isn't this kind of weird now? I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure that as he goes to bed, he refers refers to Doc Holliday as his friend. And he goes like, no, he's a nice guy. Like, why would you want to hurt him? He's a nice guy. He gave me his gun and everything. He didn't even charge me for the tooth removal. So this guy's a straight up murderer. Like, we have... I'm pretty sure there's no doubt among any people watching the show that this guy is a bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
At this juncture, in the next town over, Ringo on his own finds Chester LaRue.
Yeah.
Chester LaRue says that Doc Holliday skipped town
to New Mexico.
With Dodo. So he takes her captive and brings her back to Tombstone.
Very rapey scene.
Yeah,
like, well, she obviously does not want to be with him, and he just goes, no, you are with me now, points a gun at her and goes, go upstairs.
You're my wife now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing. It's very much like the love story between Charlize Theron and what's-his-face from Taken 1, 2, and 7 in A Million Ways to Die in the West, which is not a good film, by the way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She's taken back to Tombstone. Steven doesn't find... them at this point.
I don't think so. I'm not really sure what happens to Steve. He basically just F's off. Like, he is gone.
He's just gone.
Yeah.
Back at Tombstone, Wyatt Earp's ranks are bolstered by his brother, Virgil Earp, turns up.
Is that what happens?
Yes. Yeah, because that's when they put a sheet over.
I think we skipped ahead before. I think we end this episode on young Werp being shot.
Yes.
Yeah. But in the meantime, I'm pretty sure, or possibly this is the start of episode 4. Who gives a shit, ladies and gentlemen? Werp and Mustachio Pete, they go to the bar and find Herpetic Bob dead.
That's why they left the county jail and left young Werp in charge.
Shitballs, you are mind blown. Okay, end of episode 3, episode 4, the OK Corral. By the way, what does OK stand for? Do we care?
No.
All right, let's not even...
I think it's just, like...
It's the alright.
Satisfactory Corral.
It's all right.
It's not great. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's like a Yelp review.
Yes, we open episode 4 on, as we said, Werp and Mustachio Pete finding Herpetic Bob's body.
Yeah, they prop him up on the bar in which he was slain.
Yeah.
And then put a sheet over him. Like, that is some sort of burial and or hygienic thing to do.
Yeah, comestibles are served in this place.
Yeah. They continue to...
Shortly thereafter, maybe 1 meter away from where a corpse was lying and decaying in full view of everyone, the doctor drinks a glass of milk. Like, it is just... plain gross.
They might as well have done body shots out of his navel. Like, it's disgusting. Anyway. At this juncture, that's when Virgil Earp turns up.
Okay.
And bosses ranks. And at this point is when the sides are beginning to form. We've got the Earps on one side, the Clanners on one side, and they're to meet at the OK Corral.
Yes. And this is... Stephen is there as well. So presumably Ringo Starr brought him along with him back to Papa Clanton's.
Presumably, I forget. But the point is that not only are the Earps outgunned with the Clantons being 4 of them and them being 2, but also Ringo's there and they don't know about him.
Yeah, exactly.
So they hatch a plan to lure the Earps out into the OK Corral, into a gunfight, and then Ringo will...
Actually, wait. Okay. Before you say that, I think we need a soundbite what you were about to say.
Okay.
Yeah? Do you want to set it up? Who says this?
Ringo says,
I'll take him from behind while you face him.
Which obviously we had a giggle about because for some reason we're 14.
I think it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
But, okay, so hang on. Has this already happened or is this about to happen? One of them, possibly Virgil or someone, or actually maybe it's the Doc. No.
Masterson deputizes the Doc.
Yes, but someone goes to Papa Clanton's before the Doc goes there to, I guess, just chat with them, and it doesn't go very well.
Yeah,
I think.
Pretty much.
Is this what happens? Wait, one...
The moral
two
of
people
the story
go
is
there.
Diplomacy is dead.
Yeah, but also it makes no sense. Like, nothing makes sense here. Not sure if this has happened already or if this is about to happen, but Virgil Werp, he turns up at Papa Clanton's. And you made a very good point while we were watching this a moment ago in saying that, like, he turns up and says, listen, the law has nothing to do with this. We are now going to have, like...
A gunfight at the OK Corral.
Yeah. High noon or, like, at sunup.
Those are very different times.
Yeah. And also, like, we are basically just going to blast each other until we're all dead.
Yeah.
Like, one side is going to come out of this victorious. He is there and they can fucking shoot him.
They've all got guns pointed at him. And they're all like, yes, let's agree to this. Like, or just shoot him now and then latterly find his brother and then shoot him.
Yeah, and thus improve your chances of success. Like, he is there. He's not pointing a gun at you. Just kill him. So anyway, they don't. He goes back and says, yeah, they're all up for meeting up later on.
It's like they've arranged a game of paintball.
Yeah.
Rather than deadly, deadly gunplay.
Yeah, and then the doctor is sent there as well. I think we're probably skipping a few things, but no one gives a damn. So the doctor then goes there as well. Mm. He's been deputized. He goes to speak to them. And when he turns up, like brandishing his little sheriff's badge, Stephen tells him, listen, Ringo is also here, and he's going to go around the back and take everyone from behind. And Papa Clanton, all he has to say about this is, stop talking. Stop giving away our plan.
Shoot him in the face.
Yeah. But that's it. Like, no one shoots the doctor. And also, the doctor gives away their plan. He's like, oh, listen, you think it's just these people. Well, we have a secret weapon that I'm going to give away to you. We've got Doc Holliday who's just come back as well. Which, spoiler alert, he has. Like, everyone is just feeding each other all of the secrets. Like,
it's really shitty writing sometimes, because they basically, they kill indiscriminately to say, oh, we're cold-blooded killers and we don't care about killing, so we'll kill for really not practical reasons or pragmatic reasons. The bartender didn't have to die.
Yeah.
You know, Seth Rogen didn't have to die. Not Seth Rogen, I forget, Baldwin. Baldwin didn't have to die. They just shoot people and we're like, oh man, they're cold-blooded killers. But when they actually had to...
Wait, Baldwin actually dead?
Yeah.
He might be dead.
So. And young Werp, all right? Which also, he didn't have to die.
Yeah.
He was up at gunpoint. They could have just released Clanton. But
you could argue, though, and I'm pretty sure...
He's a preemptive...
No, as in, like, I think I remember this from Tombstone, the... no, not Tombstone. Wyatt Earp, the Kevin Costner version, that the kid brother actually was shot.
All right, okay. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. But either way, the point is that when it was super practical for them to shoot people...
They don't.
But then, I guess, you never get what is the historical account of the gunfight, the Oak Ridge Rail featuring Wyatt Earp. Virgil, Doc Holliday, if they do kill him, like, that's actually altering the course of history and doesn't make it historical anymore.
Who knows?
I think that, okay, I'll give them a pass. That's fair enough. Because you need all those people in the end gunfight for
sure.
It to be the gunfight, the OK Corral.
I'm happy with all that.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Anyway.
We've now got sides amassed at this point. So,
I'm pretty sure.
So on one side, we've got Doc Holliday, Virgil Earp, Wyatt Earp. And that's the Earp side.
Wait, hang on. We've got three Earps.
Three Earps.
Is it three Earps? No, it's two Earps.
Two Earps and a holiday.
Two Earps and a
holiday.
That's my favorite cocktail.
Yeah.
So, okay, so two Earps and a holiday. But yeah. Holiday is like his... Master plan was, I'm going to be walking along the shady side of the road.
Yeah, at least Ringo had a plan, like he was going to pincer movement them.
Everyone else is just like, in the slowest fashion imaginable, everyone else being the two herbs, in the slowest fashion imaginable, they are just trudging down. They're like promenading down the thoroughfare.
Yeah.
Towards the, is it two Clantons? Three Clantons and possibly a Baldwin if he's still alive, we can't remember.
Just the three Clantons.
Three Clantons.
So there's...
And Ringo Starr is somewhere behind the herbs. And they're just like, I mean, this is where, okay, how many guns are there here? There are three Clantons, one Ringo Starr, two Wyatt Earps, and one Doc Holliday. That is
full
seven
house.
Guns. Full house. That's seven guns times six. That's 42 bullets. Approximately 500 bullets later.
It was like Call of Duty.
Yeah, it is insane. They're just like, it's crazy. And while the Clantons are firing at them, they fire at them for like a good 10 seconds before the two Earps actually take up. Yeah, it's the dumbest thing ever. If you haven't seen this episode, don't bother, but please, for the love of all that is sweet and pure in the universe, YouTube this one gunfight, because it's ridiculous. So yeah, anyway, they have this crazy gunfight. They shoot at least 100.
Before we move on,
okay. Yeah,
so
and the dildo scene.
Yeah, and the dildo scene. But Ringo comes up with a very clear plan. So the Clantons are going to shoot with them from the
front, yeah.
And Ringo's going to circle around and mow them down from the back.
Yeah,
that
does
is
he do
a
that?
Clear.
Does he do that?
No, he doesn't. But to be fair, you know, he came up with a clear stratagem.
Yeah,
and it was. Well laid out, and it's, you know, it's very basic strategy.
Yeah.
Pincer movement, right?
Sure.
So, Doc Holliday, who is in turn the, you know...
He's the Ringo Starr of the Whoops.
He's the Ringo Starr of the Whoops. He's their secret weapon. They've got Doc Holliday back, so that's when the odds are balanced.
Yeah.
And so, Wyatt Earp, the legendary Wyatt Earp, turns to, again, the, you know, as legendary Doc Holliday, and he says, so what do you plan to do? He's like, I'm just going to walk behind you in the shade. It's not really a plan, is it, Doc? It's not.
Is that something you enjoy doing?
Is it hot? Do you burn easily? What's it like?
You're looking a little pale there, Doc.
Anyway, so that was his plan. It does work.
You might benefit from some vitamin D. Anyway, so yeah. And then there's that little kind of standoff between Doc Holliday and Ringo Starr. Because the two of them are about to face off. And then out of nowhere appears Dildo, who just... I mean, I didn't get this. She said that she was trying to help Doc Holliday.
Mm.
But, I mean, she just suddenly...
I don't know how and what with.
Yeah, exactly. She just appears out of nowhere, is taken hostage by Ringo Starr.
Which is obviously her main use in plot devices.
Yeah, that's...
Herbie. She's a hostage for, like, three different reasons in this,
serial.
Stop getting fucking captured and shit. Anyway.
Okay, so she gets captured again, and Ringo Starr convinces Doc Holliday to throw away his gun. Doc Holliday is now, at least temporarily, unarmed.
Mm.
Ringo Starr is aiming a gun at him, does not shoot.
For some reason.
Obviously not. Instead, he walks towards the gun that Doc Holliday has just discarded in order to pick it up for no reason whatsoever.
He already has one. You already have an infinite amount of gun compared to your, you know, your opponent.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know why you need two guns, just to really hammer home the point that you have two guns and your opponent has no guns.
But still,
anyway,
you do.
So he does. So he inches towards this gun, and then...
Dildo somehow gets away.
No, I'm not sure that she does.
Either way, spoiler alert, Doc Holliday shoots Ringo Starr in the stomach or whatever.
With his trusty Dillinger.
Yeah, with his tiny little garter belt gun. That's so sexy.
It's so sexy.
So basically, Doc Holliday pulls this gun out of his pantyhose, fires it at Ringo Starr. Ringo Starr is about to die, dies in his arms, Kablamatron, and Ringo Starr... No, sorry, Doc Holliday has, like...
A full-on gloat in his face. In his
face. One-liner. I can't remember what it was, though. Was it? Is it worth soundbiting, do you think?
Yeah, very possibly.
Probably. Okay, possible soundbites.
Ringo was here, and... Ain't no more.
Hope that was worth it.
Hope that was an actual soundbite, and not just like stopping for a second. Anyway, so he gloats in Dying Man's face.
Yes. And then we get another few thousand bullets.
Yeah, and then basically the Clantons being sort of picked off by the remaining ERPs.
Yeah, all of the ERPs survive, all of the Clantons die.
Which is, so, well,
I don't remember this being the case.
I had a little wiki just before we started recording.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, that was basically the skeletons of the sides. There were some ERPs, there were some Clantons.
Sure.
All the Clantons died. Wyatt Earp was the only one that remained unscathed. Doc Holliday and Virgil Earp get wounded.
Okay.
But it's not sure if they died there or not.
Well, I mean, as with most things in life, I tend to believe Val Kilmer, and I'm pretty sure that he then went on to die of, like, typhoid or something.
Right.
So I'm going to say that's probably what happened.
Okay.
Anyway. And then who was it? Was it Virgil? No. Is it Virgil Earp?
Yeah.
Who's the other one?
Yeah.
Virgil Earp. Yeah, he then goes on to become the guy who narrates Big Lebowski.
All right.
Yeah. Essentially, this is the end now. Everyone's all chummy.
All the people are dead that are supposed to be dead, and probably a few that weren't supposed to be dead.
Are also dead.
Yeah.
We can now finally round off this horrendous thing, and how do we do that with even more singing? And this is actually, yeah, we completely forgot about this pin that we popped in the plot as well. The song has now turned from "this is what's happening" to "this is what you all know to have happened because you've learned it in school." Mm. Like, there's even the line at one point where the song goes, "and they were heading to the OK Corral, where, as you know, they faced off and there was lots of, like, death." And holy shitballs.
Not catchy.
Yes. Sorry. Wait, hang on. I made a note of another one that I think we should, like, retcon into the
brilliant.
Thing.
These are some of the greatest lyrics.
Oh, there's such a good one.
Try and sing it.
This is a retcon. We'll soundbite this after we try to say this, okay? But this is retcon from episode 3 when Werp pistol whips one of the Clantons and they carry him into the cell. And the song goes, "pick him up gentle, he's gone kinda mental."
A little bit on the nose, I guess.
Yeah, maybe I didn't do that justice.
No, it's a good to know.
Should we soundbite that? Yeah. I think there was an end to that as well. Like, he's gone kind of mental because...
We hate Orientals. that would have been... That would have been the caliber of writing.
So pick him up gentle, kind of mental under Earth's heavy blow.
Okay, yeah. Oh, and there was the line... Oh, shit, I made a few notes here and we completely missed this. There was the line fuck-up from the Doctor when he refers to Stephen as a she.
Yeah.
Episode yeah, three
she's
as well.
Gone after him, which is when Stephen was to go after Dodo.
Yeah, exactly.
Young Stephen is following up, but I've got to wait.
You mean Regret has gone after Holiday alone?
No, no, my dear Marshal, no. She's gone with a young man by the name of Ringo.
Yeah, that's another retcon soundbite there. Absolutely. Hope you enjoyed that. Yeah. Okie dokie.
So that's basically it. That's pretty much it. I can't actually remember what happened to the composite characters that have taken us through this story.
Well, only let's all go back to the TARDIS is basically what happens.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a nice malted milk.
Werp is now gone. They're taken back to the TARDIS by Doc Holliday and Chesty LaRue.
Yeah.
And Doc Holliday kindly gives the Doctor a gift, which is a wanted poster with a photo of him from Shutterstock.
Yeah.
And then when they leave, which is like, why are they leading them to this, like, feed place? How is this not weird to these two cowboys, these, like, Wild West people? Like, we're just going to lead
you
them to these...
You live in the feed place? Where's your house?
You live in a blue box in a place where they make grain, whatever. Well, okay, whatever. So they then turn around, leave, and the Doctor discards this beautiful gift that he was just given, which would, by the way, make a kick-ass souvenir. He just throws it on the ground and they go back in the TARDIS. And then we get a little scene from the next episode, which is all of a sudden they've switched to like future clothes. And the Doctor goes, I think we've finally arrived in the future. And everyone's like super intelligent and pleasant.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
Yeah. Everyone hugs every day.
Every day, hugs are mandatory.
Hugs are mandatory.
Everyone is super kind, but if you're not kind to people, we will be mean to you. Whatever. Like
hugs in Haribo.
I would love to live in that world.
Hugs in Haribo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, end of The Gunfighters.
Yeah, I hope that was enjoyable.
I'm sure that was very illuminating and elucidating.
If you did, I mean, I feel like our version of events...
Was
better.
Yes, and probably equally chaotic. No, okay, we probably had a slightly more chaotic rendition.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, shall we review this fucker? Like, give it a rating and stuff?
Let's.
Reviews.
Reviews!
I guess I'll start.
Yes, I think you should.
And like the corral itself, I'm going to say it was okay.
Oh, nice.
It was okay. I'm not going to... If the rating is 0.0 to 5.0...
Yeah.
1.9.
Oh, wow. Actually, you know what? I think that's probably a fair one.
Yeah.
I'll give it a little bit more, I think. Okay, 1.9. Okay. What were the high points? What were the low points?
Doc Holliday. Actually, the more I talk about him, the more I miss him. No. he was actually fairly decent-ish character, I think, for the sphere of the thing. Low points were... I don't know. The accents turned into a high point because it was just so laughable that they couldn't keep up a Wild West accent. But I think just Hartnell was so not absent in the way that a normal absentee Doctor episode is cool because it's framed around the fact that he's not involved.
Yeah.
It was just quite clearly they were just stuffing him into scenes that he had no business being part of.
Yeah.
He affected the story very little.
No, that's very true.
Yeah, so I wasn't... Yeah, those were my highs and lows.
Okie dokie. All right, I'm probably going to give this a little bit of a higher mark than you have. I'm going to agree with you, though. I think Doc Holliday was definitely the higher point of this. I think he was, even when he was like a complete bad guy and a complete asshole, I think he was far more charismatic than any other character in this serial. Like, he was just interesting to watch and kind of entertaining, even though we failed to mention the fact that he has a mustache like freaking whale's teeth. Like, it's just like filters over his mouth. It's clearly fake. And he is, for no apparent reason, this gross old man is plowing like the only attractive woman in the entire town. Like, it's the weirdest thing. Whatever. I thought he was super charismatic. Plus points for that. Crazy sexist serial, as per usual. Some minus points for that. Oh, but yeah. What can you do? Like, it's of the times. Unfortunately, that's what it was like. And we've discussed that ad nauseum on the show. Werp was pretty okay, I think. I mean,
Werp was okay.
Yeah, he was
Werp
okay.
Was solid.
This is Werp numero uno, like main Werp.
Yeah, main Werp. The only Werp I care about.
Werp Prime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stephen was ridiculous. Dodo Dildo was ridiculous. most of it. Actually, you know what? Fuck it. The serial was ridiculous. It
was quite clearly someone at the BBC that had a boner for the Tombstone, like, you know, story, had no real way of fitting it into the Doctor Who narrative and or universe, and just like, I really want to do a Tombstone, like, TV series, but no one will commission me.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to write it as if it's Doctor Who, and just, that'll be it.
Fair enough. And actually, okay, I don't really know how it fits in, but every sci-fi series, pretty much, okay, not every, but so many sci-fi series.
A callback to a Western.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a Star Trek Wild West episode that actually takes place at the OK Corral.
Firefly is basically half Western.
Exactly. Like, but all of these ones that have, like, oh, I'm going to go to a planet, or we're going to go to a planet, and that planet is basically just an excuse to use the props from that show.
Yeah.
Like, all of those have a Wild West episode. And this was, I guess, the first Doctor Who Wild West episode, and as such, it was actually not
many
bad.
More since, or at least one that I can think of since.
There's a Matt Smith one.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in that regard, even though there were practically no townsfolk in this place, I think they did a pretty good job production value wise. I do think the plot could have been condensed into maybe two episodes as opposed to four episodes. Whatever, I'll cut this short. I'm going to give this a 2.1. I have no. Now! Oh, I feel too generous now. I'm going to give it a. Oh, I'm giving it a 2.0. Oh, I already regret that as well. I have no idea how that fits in with other ratings that I've given for Classic Who, but, you know, whatever. When we do the Hartnell retrospective, I'll look back and I'll regret most of the marks that I've given. Anyway, 2.0. Listener minis. Aloha, Future Ponkin here. We received 3 listener minis for this episode, and we did actually sit down and record them. I'm not entirely sure what happened to the file, but the recording got all garbled. So here we go. I'm going to redo it this time. So I'm really, really sorry you are missing out on that initial reaction that we both had upon first reading of these reviews. But we did do it, like, I'm going to say it was, what, like a couple of weeks ago, maybe? 1 week ago? Oh, I have no idea. Anyway, it's going to be relatively fresh in my mind. Here we go. Okay, this first listener mini comes from Gallifrey and Buccaneer. How you doing, Alan? Everything good? I certainly hope so. Here we go. Gallifrey and Buccaneer says, this is really a love it or hate it serial. Personally, I love it. It still stands to me as one of the highlights of Hartnell's run, and not just that, but all of 60s Who. Unlike the Celestial Toymaker, this story is such fun. Okay, you know what? I will agree with you. Sorry to interrupt your mini here, Gallifrey and Buccaneer. I will agree with you in terms of the comparison with Celestial Toymaker. Let's see how Gallifrey and Buccaneer goes on. He says, the musical interludes can be repetitive and grating at times. Yeah, no shit. But if you embrace it, it adds an element we don't normally get in Doctor Who. Just having it there shows that this story is going to be something different. Not space stations and Daleks, but the Wild West! There's a touch of farce to the whole thing, and it sends up the actual history brilliantly, with a doctor visiting Doc Holliday due to a dicky tooth. Dicky. Sorry. He goes on. Stephen getting roped in to sing the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon, and the Clantons wonderfully scenery-chewing villains. Hartnell is clearly loving every moment, and that's saying something, knowing his state of health at the time. I know Peter Purvis wasn't a fan of all the singing, but that's just too bad, I suppose. This story has had a bad reputation for decades, and I think it's great that it's now starting to get praised by the newer fans delving into the classics. I'm certainly one of them. Even taken in the context of its broadcast season, it's one hell of a breath of fresh air. After all the death in earlier stories, and the disappointingly poor stories. The Ark, and the Celestial Toymaker, particularly that last one. It's Doctor Who, in the Wild West. Yes, there's a silly song. Deal with it. Stetsons are definitely cool. And Gallifrey and Buccaneer concludes by saying, The Gunfighters gets a 4.1 from me. Holy sweet buttery Moses. Gallifrey and Buccaneer, okay. Okay, as per usual, I'm loving your mini review, but holy shit, now I feel so bad. I feel so, what did I give this? I gave this a 2.0, I think. Oh man, 4.1. I would say that's probably a little bit more than I would have given it even upon closer scrutiny and further reflection. But I do have to agree with you. I mean, this is much more jovial in tone compared to prior episodes. And yes, it is farcical at times. Okay, you know what? I'm not gonna argue with you. Gallifrey and Buccaneer, thank you so much for this review. This is awesome. People who are not Gallifrey and Buccaneer, you need to follow him on Twitter. Tell him if you agree with his mini. Tell him if you disagree with his mini. Either way, tell him hi from me. He is at Alan Trussler. That's Trussler with 2 S's. Numero dos, we've got Kyle Rathmeister. How you doing? He goes, Howdy, y'all. After being away for a spell, I reckon it was time I got back in the saddle. God damn it, I couldn't agree with you more, Matt Kyle. Okay, he goes on. Sigh. Somewhere in time and space is a place called the Last Chance Saloon. It has a theme song, and by the end of the first serial, it will affix itself to the inside of your skull like a mental hemorrhoid. That's awesome. Tombstone, Arizona, 1881. The doctor has a toothache, and the only prescription might actually be more cowbell. Fortunately, as with most Doctor Who historicals, all of the most relevant and necessary characters are within easy reach 5 minutes into the episode. Mistaken for Doc Holliday, the Doctor and his two fancy-dressed cowpokes find themselves caught up in the not-so-true events of the gunfight at the OK Corral. That's kind of all you need to know. If this story feels at all familiar, it's because 2 years later, Star Trek rips it off in color. Holy shit, we said this. Telepathy alert. He goes on. Bullet points to consider. Number 1. Stephen Regret. Best appropriate alias / unintentional cheap shot in Doctor Who history. Okay, awesome. Number 2. Mr. Worp. I never get tired of Hartnell's potshot mispronunciations. Number 3. Despite a story shot full of plot holes and historical inaccuracy, the set design wasn't actually half bad. Holy shit, I totally agree with you on that one. Pretty sure I even said that. Yeah, totally agree with you. Number 4. For a satire, there is a lot of fucking shooting and killing in this serial. Number 5. Whoever had the idea for a sing-along plot should be shot. Oh, wow. Yes. I will echo that sentiment. Kyle goes on. The historical has always been a hit or miss for Doctor Who. This is the last time the Doctor has a full-on adventure with historical figures until the 6th Doctor adventure, The Mark of the Rani. Wait, what? Holy shit, I didn't know that. That's insane. What? Okay, there is reason for it. Blunt force time travel doesn't work unless it's clever. And clever was not part of the usual repertoire for Doctor Who during this period. In defense of the production team, I suppose it's easy to become prey to all of the cliché-written convention of the American West. For my first time back, I'm still pretty harsh. 1.5 for all the obvious reasons. Weak story, terrible soundtrack, bad accents, and jokey dialogue that gets a little long in the tooth. Oh, and Steven's awful outfit. Maybe little Bobby Zemeckis was Whovian growing up. Yes. Yes, exactly. He even adds in brackets. Hint, Marty's outfit in Back to the Future 3. Holy moly. Yes. He concludes, finally, a question. When a Time Lord regenerates, what happens to his pulled tooth? Yes, exactly. Holy shit. Okay, like I said, we did record these minis back at the time. And fortunately, I've sort of forgotten what we were saying at the time, but this does definitely ring a bell, and I'm pretty sure I said something along the lines of, we could totally have a story, and for all I know, there is such a story. I mean, I haven't seen all of Classic Who, as you know, but we could totally have a story where someone finds his tooth buried deep in the sand or like in a little tin case with lots of other pulled teeth, but there's that one tooth that is a-glowing and it somehow sets off some crazy cosmic event or can be used as like a secret weapon for some evil Time Lord or whatever. Like, you could totally fit that tooth into future plots. Yes. Okay. Very good question. JD, are you listening to this? What do you think? All right. Kyle, awesome as usual. Thank you so much for sending in your mini. People who are not, Kyle Rath, what are you waiting for? Are you following him on Twitter already? Oh, you are? Oh, okay. In that case, don't worry about it. Are you not? Wait, that's insane. Okay, do so right now. He is at Sinister Super Spy. That is super without any vowels. Oh, and just as a PS, Kyle, thanks so much for tweeting across a photo of your Halloween outfits. Chris Eccleston wishes he looked that awesome. Fantastic outfit. God, I really got to get into my Doctor Who cosplay. Very, very cool. Anyway, thanks again. Numero tres. I don't speak Spanish. We have Gina Guerrero. Gina! How are you doing? Holy crap, I've been missing the shit out of you, Gina. Gina goes, I am so excited to review the Gunfighters because there are so many good things and terrible things in this story. The Doctor, Dodo, and Steven arrive in Tombstone, Arizona in 1881 because the Doc inexplicably has a toothache. Not inexplicably, Gina, check out the Celestial Toymaker. Okay, hang on. Gina goes on. First off, I understood what Doctor Who was trying to do with the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon, being an homage to classic westerns. However, I personally found the singing throughout the story as irritating and repetitive. Yeah, I second that one. Every time a scene ended, I began to cringe waiting for the awful Last Chance Saloon song to begin again. At least Steven and Dodo's, who both can play piano all of a sudden? version was the least cringeworthy. Yeah, totally agree. What I found particularly amusing were the different levels of Western accents. I felt the actor who played Doc Holliday was not only the most interesting and entertaining, but also had the best accent of the lot. Yep, agreed. And then we had the actor playing Johnny Ringo, who didn't even try to have an accent other than his British one, which I also thought was hilarious. I'm not sure I picked up on that, actually. Did I? Maybe I did. I can't remember. For the actual story and plot, it was a good historical, even though it was almost completely inaccurate. The gunfight at the OK Corral lasted less than a minute, and many of the people in the Doctor Who story weren't even in Tombstone when it occurred. Being the last pure historical, it was interesting and had some funny moments, but had very little for the Doctor to actually do. He seemed more peripheral than actively moving the plot along. And some stray observations. The Doc repeatedly saying, "Don't call me Pop." The Doctor calling, "What up? Mr. Worf." Don't know if that was in the script or if it was Hartnell's doing. I loved it. I feel like this has to be the Doctor Who story with the most murders, although many were funny due to Doc Holliday. Don't know if I was the only one happy when Charlie the bartender was murdered. It's his fault for snitching to everyone. Yeah, you were not alone, Gina. Totally not alone. In summary, she says, "I enjoyed the story for the most part. It was a good first attempt for the BBC to try an American Western. I liked the mistaken identities plot, even though I saw it coming a mile away. The sets were surprisingly detailed for 60s Doctor Who. I didn't mention Dodo, because she served no purpose but to be kidnapped." Nick pointed this out. Awesome, yes. "Mostly, I just didn't care about her." Anthony Jacobs' portrayal of Doc Holliday was, for me, the highlight of the story. So I rate this a 3.3. Miss you guys! 2 exclamation points. Gina, I miss you too! That is crazy! Okay, awesome mini review as per usual. Thank you so much for sending that in. It seems to me like you are much more informed about the actual historical occurrences, the historical context, than either Nick or I are/were at the time. Here's a question for everyone who is tuning into this and who may or may not know. Gina just said this was a good first attempt for the BBC to do an American Western context style story thingy episode, TV, whatnot. Kyle pointed out that Star Trek would do the OK Corral later on as well. Does anyone know? Are there other BBC shows, sci-fi shows, that attempted the Wild West theme, ideally around about this time? I have no idea myself. If anyone knows, pop a comment on the website. I am dying to find out. People who are not Gina Guerrero, are you following her on Twitter? Most likely. But if you're not, then join the rest of the world. She is at Gina Guerrero 1. That is 1, the number. 3 for 3, one more time, all minis are spectacular. Guys, thank you so much for sending in your minis. As always, a total pleasure. Let's get back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I think maybe we should all stand up and raise our glasses to Nickelele, possibly Nickelodeon, possibly the Nick Meister or the Nick Hammer. We're going to find a good name for him. Either way, Nick, thank you so much for joining the classic team, man.
It's been a pleasure.
I'm sorry you started on such a shit serial.
It's okay. I'm sure it'll get better.
Yeah. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, the next one, either way, going forward, there are still quite a few lost episodes, and I will still be doing them as solo missions, unless you fancy joining me on those suicide missions. But yeah, going forward, classics that are not lost, that are actually available, Nick's going to be there.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Going on the journey.
Yeah, yeah. And people who are not Nick, you can follow him on Twitter. He is
at Nickelele.
Like ukulele, but with Nick.
Yeah, I'll be in notes somewhere. In the show notes.
Yeah, it's in the show notes. And you can follow me as well. I am Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N. Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
Thanks for having me. I'm sure we're going to have an awful lot of fun together through time and space.
I think so. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for listening. Rock on, be rad and excellent to each other, and cha-chow. Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what you know in your heart to be the right thing and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Like us on Facebook, that's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Find us on Google Plus, that's plus Who Back When, all in one word. And follow or add or like us there. I have no idea what it's called on Google Plus, but if you're on Google Plus, then you should do that. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, and have a peek around our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which is increasing in badassdom by the day. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really would, but we're also planning a pretty fun surprise for everyone who has. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or Audio Who Review. Ciao, ciao.
Who Back When?